Dateline Washington, Monday, December 15th, 2008. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, the benefits of Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. It's the last thing the automakers and their supporters in Congress want to have happen to General Motors or Chrysler in the coming months. But Andrew Grossman of the Heritage Foundation is here to explain why it really would be the best path for these troubled automakers. Also in this edition, filling a Senate seat. No, not the corruption investigation in Illinois, but in New York State, where Senator Hillary Clinton is likely to be confirmed as the next Secretary of State, and Caroline Kennedy says she's interested in the job. What will Governor David Patterson have to evaluate before naming her or anyone else to the seat? Plus, the Obama energy team will assess the figures and their likely agenda with Max Schultz of the Manhattan Institute. And bringing Christmas to the troops. We'll tell you about a great project sponsored by Move America Forward. We'll be talking with Gold Star mother, Debbie Lee. All that, plus Monday's headlines. Follow our conversation with Andrew Grossman of the Heritage Foundation. And that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is Andrew Grossman, senior legal policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation here in Washington. He's recently written a position paper explaining why it would actually be very beneficial for the big three automakers to enter into Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection rather than coming to Washington for a handout and in all likelihood having to return several times in order to keep their businesses afloat. And Andrew, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Obviously, the automakers as well as the lawmakers that support their position of getting part of the troubled asset recovery program or some other independent type of bailout say that the industry is not one that would emerge well from Chapter 11, that to enter in would essentially mean the death of the company or possibly even the domestic industry. Why do you believe that that's wrongheaded?
Well, there is an enormous amount of experience with large businesses entering the Chapter 11 reorganization process, and a lot of it's been very successful, especially by firms that face the same sort of problems that the automakers face. We're talking about outmoded means of production, bad labor agreements, difficult distribution networks. These are the kinds of things that a Chapter 11 reorganization allows a company to revisit, reorganize, and then emerge stronger in a more competitive vein.
And talk about how that's worked in other industries, whether it's been done before in the auto industry or in other large industries, that there's some sort of comparison that can be accurately made to the auto industry that gives us a good idea of how this would go.
Well, I think the industry that Americans would have the most familiarity with is the airlines. When the airlines, following September 11th, found themselves in very severe difficulties with high labor costs and high equipment costs, a number of them went into bankruptcy, and at the time, the airlines were very concerned that consumers would simply stop purchasing tickets for the future because they would be concerned the airlines wouldn't be there, and the consumers would fear that sort of invisible expenses, things like safety and maintenance, would be skimped on by these organizations. And needless to say, that didn't happen. Demand actually picked up and remained strong, and the companies have emerged, and in our current economic difficulties right now, you see that the domestic airlines are actually a lot stronger in weathering the storm reasonably well.
In terms of the complexity, and this is one of the things you talk about in your position paper, because there's an argument out there that automakers are too complex for bankruptcy. We've heard from the financial industry that certain firms are too big to fail. Now we're hearing some are too complex to fail. Why is that flawed, in your opinion?
Complexity is really an area where bankruptcy law shines, and that's something that anyone who's had a lot of experience in that area of the law is very familiar with. What bankruptcy does is it deals with the problem when a company's creditors are owed more money than the company actually has. And so you're inevitably going to have very complex situations. Sometimes you'll have companies that have thousands or tens of thousands of creditors, people to whom they owe money. And all these people are battling for a fixed pool of assets. And sometimes when you do a reorganization, the company is actually worth more if it's an ongoing business than if it actually cashes out all those claims. And so you're juggling, in an average complex case, you could be juggling thousands or tens of thousands of claims, and then you've got labor unions, and then you have suppliers. And yet, this is where bankruptcy does really well, because the bankruptcy judge wields an enormous amount of power in the case, and so is able to really tell these people, you have to back off for a little bit, you have to give the company some breathing room. And in the end, that works out in everyone's best interest. The creditors wind up better off than they would have been overall, and the company manages to get back on its feet.
We're talking with Andrew Grossman of the Heritage Foundation. And Andrew, if in fact there's a strong track record for corporations emerging much stronger after going through Chapter 11, why do you believe that the automakers are so resistant to that? Is it simply a PR thing? Are they interested in just getting taxpayer money here? Why are they so resistant to that idea, do you think?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. First is the labor angle. The labor unions for the big three, the workers there earn a lot more on an hourly basis if you take wages as well as benefits than the workers do at the foreign-owned U.S. manufacturers of automobiles. And you're going to see a shrinking of that differential if the company goes into bankruptcy. Now, you'll see that anyway if there is a bailout or some other solution to this problem, but it'll be a lot slower, it'll be more gradual. So the union aspect cannot be overlooked. There's also the issue of shareholders. Often, when a company goes into bankruptcy, the shareholders are wiped out. It's not the bankruptcy process that does that. The bankruptcy process just recognizes that their stake in the company has already been eliminated. So especially in the case of Ford, which is really the healthiest of the big three at this point, but certainly as well in the case of Chrysler, which is owned by a private wealth fund, the shareholders are very reluctant to lose a substantial portion of their stake in the companies, at least more than they've already lost, which is, frankly, most of it. And then there's just the issue of the executives' own positions. Oftentimes, corporate leaders, when their company goes into bankruptcy, lose their positions. I think that you could really expect that to happen for the big three automakers.
Andrew, we've talked about it in general terms, and you've gotten specific on a number of points, but for those who aren't very familiar with Chapter 11, walk us through it. How long does it normally take, and what are the big decisions that need to be made in terms of restructuring and returning with a more profitable and more effective business model?
Well, the first thing a company does is it files. And the moment that it files for bankruptcy, it has the benefit of what's called an automatic stay. This means that all the creditors who are trying to get money from that corporation have to back off and give it some breathing room. It's then in a position where it can reorganize its affairs. There's a fair process that's laid out in the bankruptcy code that allows the company to renegotiate labor agreements. And if it can't reach an agreement, the court can impose an agreement with the union that's consistent with the economic needs. The same is true of retiree benefits. Again, there's not a wholesale wiping out. What there is the court revisits these decisions and realigns them with what's possible economically at this point in time. The company can also modify contracts that it's engaged in, and this is particularly important for the automakers. General Motors, for example, has north of 6,000 dealerships, which is far more than it can efficiently work with at this time to sell cars. Analysts agree that it needs to get rid of somewhere around 4,000 to 5,000 of those dealerships to compete effectively with foreign automakers. State franchise laws prevent General Motors from doing that. They also prevent it from closing down outmoded nameplates like Pontiac. But under bankruptcy law, it can get around those state franchise laws and do that quickly and effectively in a way that doesn't cost it billions and billions of dollars, which is what General Motors' experience was when it had to shut down Oldsmobile 4 years ago. So it really opens up a lot of possibilities. The difficult part, of course, is creating the plan, how it is you're going to turn around. But the automakers have to do that regardless. Bankruptcy just gives them a lot more tools to affect that turnaround.
What about some of the ancillary industries like parts and supplies and that sort of thing? How would they be impacted by a major automaker going through this?
Well, of course, they're going to have to watch their cash flow situations very carefully. And there is the possibility that a couple of them may wind up going into bankruptcy themselves, in which case they would have sort of the same process to go through. But I think that a big part of bankruptcy, especially for the automakers, is going to be converting debt to equity. And that will really improve their cash flow situations pretty quickly and enable them to start channeling money to their necessary suppliers. So I think the effect on the broader auto market, including parts suppliers, and all these ancillary companies, is probably going to be a little bit less severe than some people are predicting.
This is a question that I'm about to ask that I'm sure a lot of people are asking right now, but what's your sense of the philosophy moving forward here with the Bush administration? For the longest time, they didn't want any of the TARP money going towards any potential auto industry bailout, but now that the Senate has rejected the $14 billion plan, the president was looking at taking the money out of there to provide the $14 billion. Now we're hearing it's up as high as $40 billion. What's your read on their strategy moving forward here?
From all appearances, what's going on in the White House right now is pure chaos. It's like so much of what we've seen under this TARP program, where the administration goes in one direction and then in another direction. It depends on whom you talk to, and you get different answers out of everyone with what they're planning on doing with the automakers. We've heard three separate plans. One is, as you said, loans or loan guarantees of up to $40 billion as part of a broader sort of economy-wide bailout proposal under the TARP. Another we've heard is somewhere around $10 to $15 billion in bridge lending that would be designed to get the automakers through until, say, March, when the Obama administration and Congress can revisit the issue. And the third option that we've heard is some form of government bridge financing that is only given once the companies file for a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. In other words, to try and do a managed bankruptcy with everything planned out ahead of time. Now, none of these are great options, but to my mind, if you're going to use government money, that third one, the bankruptcy, is probably the least bad way to do it.
Andrew, we heard before the passage of the Wall Street bailout that taxpayers would get their money back. We've heard the same thing, at least in terms of the bridge loan possibility. How accurate is that prediction from what you can read right now?
Well, whether or not taxpayers get their money back is actually a surprisingly complicated question. The issue is that the government has been trying to set up these loans with a special priority so that if the companies do wind up in bankruptcy, the government is the first party that's paid off. The problem, however, is that there may actually be constitutional limitations to the government's ability to do that, and it would really, in the end, wind up being decided in court. There are already lenders to these companies that have high priority loans that, you know, they have signed agreements with those companies that they're going to be the first ones paid off. That's why they did the lending. There's the broader issue that the government stepping in and doing these kinds of loans that have very high priority is really making a lot of lenders across the economy nervous about whether they can lend money to companies in troubled industries. So, you know, the taxpayers may wind up getting their money back, but that could still be a very expensive proposition.
Andrew, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you, sir, for helping us understand this complicated process a whole lot better.
Oh, my pleasure.
Andrew Grossman is Senior Legal Policy Analyst in the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. This is Dateline Washington.